NDR Info. Nachtclub.
So, bei mir im Studio in der zweiten Stunde ist Jack Panate und es gibt ein neues drittes Album, After You. Und er kommt gleich zu Wort. Erstmal hören wir Musik von diesem neuen Album. Hier ist jetzt Prayer. Das war also Prayer von Jack Panate von dem neuen Album After You. Und er ist jetzt bei mir im Studio. Hi, how are you doing?
Very well, how are you?
Good to see you.
You too.
Yeah, thanks for coming down. And
a pleasure, man.
And it was interesting listening to that song Prayer because it was answering some old fans' prayers. I mean, we were almost kind of given up hope, haven't we? And out of the blue, all of a sudden, there's a new album. And I mean, obviously, you know, you won't have been just on a holiday for 10 years, but
no.
Have people accuse you of just being on holiday for 10 years?
I've been accused of that. I think there's been, maybe it's been implied. It's been implied by friends and been implied by people I know. But anyone who does know me is aware that my passion truly is for creating. I think that was never questioned. It was more just taking a hiatus, and that took a lot longer than I thought. I thought it would be 2 or 3 years, you know.
And were you quite laid back about that, or were you worrying about it yourself?
At times I was, and then I would use the example of artists that I am passionate about, like, say, Arthur Russell, who released one album in his life and fundamentally spent his life just creating for the sake of creating. And I would then tell myself, well, if that person who I look to as an absolute and utter idol and someone that I would like to feel I could emulate in some manner didn't feel he needed to release an album, why do I? And I think that's it. It was a double-edged sword there. You know, I felt comfortable to write and write and write and write and for it to never be heard by anyone. And then there was a point where I thought, actually, it's time. This music isn't just for me now. It felt pertinent. It felt, I suppose, like it could, I don't want to sound like some worthy person, but it felt like maybe it was more than me now and could help or because it was helping me. It like Prayer, for example, when I wrote that, I remember thinking, this is genuinely cathartically got me through something, and maybe that is something that could affect someone else. And I came out of myself and my own enforced kind of hermetic life of just sitting writing music for no purpose.
Yeah, and did it feel like you were almost become a recluse? I mean, were you still socialising?
No, there were periods where I really didn't. Yeah, at times it definitely felt like a recluse. 100%. I love reading. I love making music and I love listening to music. Those are my real passions. And I love film. I love watching film. And all of those basically take a solitary existence to really indulge in. And without a doubt, there are periods where I really, and I'd say it was too much, you know, it was years where I just kind of not really ingratiate myself with social life and have a very small life of going to get a coffee in the morning, going back, working, maybe going out and getting some food, maybe just making some food at home, working, going to bed. You know, that was my life. And if I'm truthful, I love that life. But I was talking about it last night to my girlfriend. I was saying, you know, there's things you love, but they might not be actually right. They might not make you feel better as a person, but you love them. So you're in this fight of, I love being reclusive, but it doesn't mean that that's what I should do. So it's I fought that for a long time, and now I'm in a position where I realise I could do both. We're already setting up time for next year to go and have a month where I can go away and spend a month writing on my own. And even just knowing I'm going to be able to do that makes me feel cool about being in a different city every day, which is what it's been like for the last month and will hopefully be like for the next few months while the record's coming out, you know, and then that's enjoyable and that's a...
Okay. Also Jack meinte, dass nicht gewusst hat, selbst, dass 10 Jahre pausieren würde. Da liegen nämlich 10 Jahre zwischen dieser neuen Platte und der letzten Platte. Und das hat eigentlich auch nicht für möglich gehalten. Es war auch nicht seine Absicht. Er dachte dann höchstens in 2, 3 Jahre Pause, um sich zu erholen eigentlich. Aber 10 Jahre wurde draus. Aber er hat sich nicht so viele Sorgen drum gemacht. Sein großes Vorbild, war immer Arthur Russell, der nur ein Album in seinem ganzen Leben gemacht hat. Und deshalb hat er gedacht, okay, wenn er dann Arthur Russell nachahmt, dann es gibt Schlimmeres. Und er meinte, es hatte so seine zwei Seiten. Er hat von einem zweischneidigen Schwert geredet. Auf der einen Seite hatte er sich schon Sorgen um die Zukunft gemacht, aber andererseits war im künstlerischen Sinne irgendwie ein bisschen entspannt. Und es ist eigentlich nur, dass sich in den letzten paar Jahren sich wieder was verändert hat bei ihm innerlich. Dass er das Gefühl hatte, dass er die neue Musik, die er komponiert hat, dass sie wirklich so wertvoll war. Und er merkte, dass es eine Art Therapie gewesen ist für ihn, eine Art Selbsttherapie. Und dass er viele so Gefühle verarbeiten konnte durch seine neue Musik. Und er wusste, dass das war der richtige Zeitpunkt dann, um ein neues Album zu machen. Aber er meinte, dass er wirklich extrem zurückgezogen gelebt hat. Er war ziemlich abgeschnitten von der Außenwelt. Er hat zwar immer in London gelebt, aber er hat teilweise nichts mit seinen Mitmenschen zu tun gehabt. Er hat vielleicht einmal ist er rausgegangen, Kaffee zu trinken und um Essen zu holen oder hat selbst gekocht, viel Musik gehört, Filme geguckt. Und er meinte, es ist letztendlich schon keine verschwendete Zeit gewesen. Aber es klingt natürlich schon, als ob es so ungewöhnlich ist. Aber letztendlich ist er froh, dass er jetzt wieder mit seinen Mitmenschen kommunizieren kann. Bevor wir mit dem neuen Album weitermachen, hören wir ein Stück von seinem Debütalbum 2007. Es hieß Matinee und war mit ziemlichen Hype verbunden. Hier ist jetzt ein Stück Spit at Stars von Jack Panatti. Das war Spit at Stars von Jack Panatti von seinem Debütalbum Matinee 2007 und Jack ist bei mir jetzt im Studio. Did it seem like a strange thing to come back into the real world and start communicating with people in a normal way like you used to? Did it take you a time to adjust or was it just a natural process?
Yeah, there were periods, to answer truthfully, which I want to, there were periods where I found it difficult to interact, especially in maybe more the business side of things, you know, in music and talking to labels and your management and things that are really important and going from just making and not having to converse why you have created something to what's the idea? What's the idea of what we're doing with this? You know, and there was definitely a grace period. But, you know, when you're confident and you are passionate about what you've made, that, I suppose there's a power that comes through in that. And I overcame that pretty quickly. And I just realized I was able to talk about the things that I'm insanely proud of.
You know? Okay. Ja, er sagte, dass er schon eine Umstellungszeit gebraucht hat, um sich wieder an die normale Welt zu gewöhnen. Also um sich daran zu gewöhnen, mit seinen Mitmenschen ganz normal zu kommunizieren. Er meinte gerade, was das Geschäftliche betrifft. Er musste irgendwie neu verhandeln, damit es ein neues Album geben könnte, das finanziell erklären. Und das fiel ihm schon schwer. Aber er meinte, es war lohnenswert, weil er ist so leidenschaftlich unterwegs, so was seine Arbeit betrifft. Denn es war ihm klar, dass es der Sache wert ist. Und er hat nicht gezögert, irgendwie weiterzumachen. So the next song we're going to hear is Murder, which is a particularly forceful example. I mean, it sounds like a comeback song in a kind of, almost like a furious kind of way.
Catharsis at its greatest, I feel.
So it probably sums up the album the best of all, in a sense, if you talked about a representative song.
Absolutely. And I was aware when we were writing it and when it was being finished in New York that it was going to be the kind of centre point of an album. And I was looking for that for a long time. You know, there was a lot of the rest of the record was already there before that song came. And it was one of those tracks that you write and you say, right, we've, you know, the heart of the album has been formed.
Right.
So it was beautiful.
So it came towards the end rather than at the beginning. That's interesting.
It was like, let me have a little look, but yeah, pretty much. I mean, to be honest, actually, if I look at this, it was kind of dead centre of the writing.
Okay.
But then other songs were formed because of having having the centre point, you now know what you can work with. And
as an after effect, I think. Yeah,
exactly. Okay.
Ja, wir hören das Stück Murder jetzt. Und er meinte auch, das ist das Herzstück des Albums. Also das Schlüssellied eigentlich. Und er ist besonders stolz drauf. Er meinte, das ist wirklich das beste Beispiel von Selbsttherapie auf dem ganzen Album. Und er sagt, das ist eigentlich gewissermaßen das Feeling und die ganze Stimmung des Albums verkörpert. Und er sagt, dass es dann mittendrin komponiert wurde. Also nicht am Anfang der Aufnahmen, nicht am Schluss der Zeit von Komposition, sondern mittendrin. Und er merkte, dass das war das Stück, das er wirklich gesucht hat. Und es ist für ihn das wichtigste Lied. Und hat auch andere Songs beeinflusst, als die anderen Songs hinterher dann entstanden sind. Also hören wir jetzt Murder von dem neuen Album After You von Jack Panatti. So, das war Murder von Jack Panatti von dem neuen dritten Album After You. Und Jack ist jetzt bei mir im Studio. And looking back, does it seem like the long and distant past? I mean, when you first started off, people were still talking in terms of their MySpace pages. and you were kind of really involved in that kind of generation as such.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and does it seem just like a distant memory? Or does it... I mean, how do you feel about the early material you made now, for example? I mean, in hindsight.
I find myself looking at it with... I think fondness is the word. I think my first album... I mean, I wrote that when I was a teenager, most of it. So it is transportative to a very sweet, innocent period of my life where I was somewhat unaware of what was going to come. The second album for me is still very pertinent, and I'm incredibly proud of that. And that feels like it resonates, and it takes me to a period that that got me here. And it was a period of destruction and hedonism.
And I think it's creatively an important album. I think it was the first time when I kind of started taking it more seriously, where I kind of thought, well, this guy's definitely got substance. He's not going to be just a flash in the pan. That's what I thought about the second album.
Thank you so much.
But I didn't know you were self-destructing at the same time.
Yeah, I was trying very hard at that.
Okay.
I was professionally working at that.
Right.
Which a lot of human beings, and especially a lot of musicians, find themselves in, you know.
The album was created in a bit of a daze, was it?
Yeah. I mean, I start that track, Tonight's the Day, I'm in a Haze. I mean, that was the lead single. And I think I've only just recognised this as we sit here, but both last two records, the first two singles, the first line on both have summed up the whole album. I'm in a haze and then I got lost.
Right.
Prayer and Tonight's Today were the first two.
Okay.
So I haven't even realised that, but I seem to make my statements pretty clear as soon as I release an album of what it's going to be about.
But you don't seem to be in a haze at the moment, though.
No. So massively clear.
Right.
Frighteningly clear. I've worked a lot to make sure I'm as conscious as I can be. I think that that's a place where you're going to be able to create a lot of great music. And I am very ambitious now, and I've taken a decade off, and I now know that I've got a decade of work to do to get myself to where I'd like to be as an artist.
Right, okay. Ja, er sagt, dass seine Erinnerungen an die erste Zeit ist irgendwie, ja, ein bisschen verschwommen. Er meinte, was das erste Album betrifft, er war so jung, er war noch ein Teenager. Er meinte, und er merkt, dass man merkt es auch, wenn man das Album hört. Es klang natürlich etwas naiv, ein bisschen unkultiviert. Und als das zweite Album entstanden ist, es war kreativ schon bedeutender und hatte mehr Substanz. Aber das Problem war, dass er ziemlich selbstzerstörerisch unterwegs war. Er hatte nämlich so viele Drogen genommen, zu der Zeit sehr hedonistisch unterwegs. Und deshalb kann er sich an die Zeit kaum erinnern eigentlich. Und er meinte, dass es gab auch viele Anspielungen auf dem Album in den Texten zu dem Thema, wie er immer so zerstreut war und geistig nicht wirklich anwesend. Also weil er dann einfach nicht nüchtern war. Aber er denkt, dass es trotzdem ein wichtiges Album war und er ist eigentlich ganz stolz drauf. Und es war ein Sprungbrett letztendlich zu diesem Album, obwohl es so lange her ist. Also 10 Jahre ist es her. Und jetzt ist er absolut fit und geistig und seelisch gesund und körperlich sehr gesund. Und er meinte, dass er letztendlich viel nachholen muss. Er meinte, die nächsten 10 Jahre muss er wirklich beweisen, wie wichtig er als Künstler ist und wie wertvoll seine Musik dann auch ist. Und es ist deshalb auch wirklich sehr wichtig, dass er diese Erfahrung gemacht hat in der Vergangenheit, aber jetzt er ist froh, dass es hinter sich gebracht hat. Is it okay if we hear a track from the second album, actually, Everything Is New?
I love that.
Yeah, one of my favorites is Put My Heart Away, actually.
Yeah, which
I think was a really strong track.
Thank you so much.
And be nice to go slightly nostalgic.
Let's hear it.
Indulge in a bit of nostalgia.
Let's do it.
Okay, wir hören jetzt ein Stück von dem zweiten Album von 2009, Everything Is New. Hier ist jetzt Put My Heart Away. Das war Put My Heart Away von Jack Panatta von dem zweiten Album, Everything Is New, von 2009. And is it... Was that the point in time, despite your self-destruction mode, where you actually did feel that, in a sense, that you knew that you could become more sophisticated as an artist, and actually, is there a point in time where you could look back and say, "Well, this is the point where I knew I've found my feet as an artist"?
Absolutely, I think it was working with someone called Paul Letworth, who produced that album with me, and. He worked on this one, but I think his belief in me and his ability to trust me as a taste wise. I mean, I think, you know, as an artist, it's a lot about your taste. You know, it's how are you going to make a guitar sound? You know, there are a thousand ways to do that, millions of ways, and there's an alchemy to it. And he very much trusted in my taste, and I think I, from then on, felt inspired to actually believe that the work I'd done my whole life just hadn't been yet shown in that first album. I'd just shown the rudimentary abilities that I had, and they were wonderfully innocent and simplistic. And then on that second album, it was as if all the work that I'd done, but just for some reason hadn't maybe had the bravery at that point to indulge in, and that is the word, you know, whether it's, you know, using somewhat jazz chords or whatever it is, all of a sudden on the second album I thought, this is my chance. And I was, you know, I had a real point to prove, and to myself, that I wouldn't be seen in a way that I felt I had been on that first album. So
were pigeonholed, weren't you, on the first album?
Absolutely.
Because there were so many artists, young songwriters starting at the same time.
Totally.
And you're all put in the same bag.
Absolutely.
Yeah, which was probably really irritating.
It was, yeah. I can't disagree. It was fucking annoying. Excuse me to swear. It was very frustrating. And so that album came at the perfect time. I had a chance to then redefine myself and hopefully show the nuance of my abilities and not just the centre abilities that I have that are focused and, you know, I know how to write a hook. No, that's something I know how to do, but that doesn't mean you have to, you know, live on that. Anyway.
No, okay. Nee, sagt, dass Paul Epworth, der Produzent, hat ihm dazu verholfen, auf dem zweiten Album wirklich an sich selbst zu glauben. Weil Paul Epworth hat den Eindruck gemacht, dass er ihm auf jeden Fall hundertprozentig vertraut und dass er wusste, dass Jack einen guten Instinkt hat und dass er irgendwie ein natürlicher Künstler sei. Und dass er ein echter Künstler war. Und er denkt, wenn er das zweite Album mit dem ersten vergleicht, ist ein Riesenunterschied, weil das erste Album war so unschuldig und so einfach. Und er hat aber sein Handwerk noch nicht richtig gelernt. Aber auf dem zweiten Album konnte er sich beweisen. Vor allem war es wichtig, also davon wegzukommen, dass er beim ersten Album so abgestempelt wurde. Er wurde nämlich in denselben Topf geworfen wie viele Songwriter, also seiner Generation. Und ich weiß nicht, ob überhaupt die Namen erwähnen dürfen, ohne dass er sich ärgert. Leute wie Lily Allen, Jamie T, Kate Nash. I'm not even sure whether I'm allowed to mention those names without you being getting really irritated.
No. They're all wonderful people.
Aber er meinte, er ist jetzt drüber hinweg. Und das zweite Album war schon seine Gelegenheit zu beweisen, dass er eine eigene Identität hat. Und dass es nicht richtig war, dass er nur in einen Topf mit so vielen anderen Künstlern geworfen wurde. Und jetzt, das dritte Album ist eben der nächste Schritt. So, Yeah, we're going to hear another track from the album now, which is maybe not an obvious choice, but I thought it was really interesting musically, is the song Gemini.
Oh, yeah, great.
And could you maybe explain a little bit the background to it? Because it's not maybe what one would expect, certainly people only know the first album.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think they were thinking there was going to be minimalist
exactly.
orchestral piano works on this one. But the background of that song is that I had this riff, because I was listening to... Sorry, that's a beautiful rendition of it.
Don't need to play the song now.
Exactly, done. I'm a big fan of Steve Reich and you know, all the modernist 80s New York composers. And I'm also a big fan of classical music, full stop. Ravel and Debussy and Sarti. I grew up obsessed with those artists. And again... what we were talking about the second record on this one, I thought, hold on, why don't I actually show a passion I have for a type of music and dare to compose something that has no singing, that is there for feeling and about pure emotion and what the listener will learn from that emotion or feel from it. And so I had this melody and I didn't know how to play it, and I tried it on Steinways in very posh studios, and I tried it in my shitty little piano that I have in my studio at home, and that didn't work. And then I was in New York and we nearly finished a record, and I went for a walk because I was feeling a bit, I don't know, like an anxiety about the album. And as I was walking, this is no lie, I walked into a piano being wheeled out of a apartment block.
In New York?
In New York. There's photos of it. And I got wheeled into it, and two guys, removal men, were like, "Hey, get out the way, man." I'm like, "Oh, I'm sorry, man, sorry." And they were like, "Do you play piano?" And I was like, "Yeah." And they're like, "Do you want a piano?"
Do you want a piano?
Yeah, so they put the seat under me. I sat down. And then I started to play the melody thing, and I was like, "This is the piano. Like, this is the track. This is the piano I've been wanting to write this track on." So I started playing.
This is on the pavement.
This is in the streets on Lafayette Street. There's videos. There's a video in it somewhere that I need to find, and people were taking photos and giving me dollars and stuff. It was ridiculous. I called up the studio, my record label studio, and I said, "Look, do you mind? I've got a piano. Can I come and bring it back there?" And they were like, "Of course." So
were trying to sell it, were they?
No, they were just giving it away. Someone's thrown it out of their house, apartment. It's crazy. So we wheeled it back to the studio through the streets with only three legs, and we put it down, and I literally just spent the next 2 hours just making the song up. It was literally one riff. One riff, and then
it didn't need to be tuned properly. The piano was okay, was it?
It sounds completely out of tune on the if you listen to it, it's like all warped and no, because I like the idea of it being a song that was. I like the idea of music being a reflection of memory on this album. I did. It was a lot of the record was created through referencing memory. And I like the idea of the piano being out of tune, like not really being there and it feeling off and wonky and...
It makes it more authentic in that
sense.
Yeah,
exactly. And then
raw.
Exactly. And then at that period, that day before I'd gone, I was listening to my grandfather's poems being written, being read by my uncle. And there was a poem about London and the destruction of London in the Blitz, and there was something that just felt pertinent and powerful, and I needed a song to come after murder. And murder was where the person has, you know, they've committed the crime and they are now on their redemptive journey back. There's an arc in the album, and they open the door to wherever, the club or the home or whatever, and they see that the city they live in is destructed, and it just felt so perfect. So okay. I just used my granddad's words.
Right. I have to point out that your granddad was a well-known figure. Not all Germans are going
to
know that.
No, yeah, of course, yeah. I mean, he's well-known to a certain type, you know. Yeah. But, yeah, he was an amazing man.
Yeah, okay. As a Mervyn Peake, wasn't it?
That's it.
Okay. Ja, also das nächste Lied, das wir hören, heißt Gemini von dem neuen Album After You. Und es ist ein ungewöhnliches Stück, die Ausnahme, die die Regel bestätigt. Und er meint, Jack, dass er sich immer so für die New Yorker Komponisten wie Steve Reich und solche Menschen sehr interessiert hat, die New Yorker minimalistische Komponisten. Und klassische Musik grundsätzlich liebt er sehr, Ravel und Debussy und Satie. Und er meinte, dass er hatte das Bedürfnis gehabt, ein instrumentales Lied zu schreiben, ohne Gesang, damit die nackte Emotionen vermittelt werden könnten. Und er hatte ein ganz eigenartiges Erlebnis in New York gehabt. Er war einfach zu Fuß unterwegs und irgendwelche Männer haben gerade ein Klavier raustransportiert aus seiner Wohnung und er stand quasi im Weg, dass diese Typen konnten gar nicht durchkommen. Und ich habe gesagt, passen Sie auf, wir müssen hier durchkommen mit unserem Klavier. Und dann hat der eine Jack gerade gefragt, spielst du Klavier eigentlich? Wirst du das Klavier haben? Jemand möchte es einfach loswerden. Wir können dir das Klavier schenken. Und hat es direkt auf der Straße, auf dem Bürgersteig dann gespielt und hat festgestellt, dass er den Klang total mochte, obwohl es ziemlich verstimmt war. Ziemlich altes Klavier, aber konnte sein Glück gar nicht fassen. Und hat es dann zurückgebracht zu dem Studio in New York, wo er gerade gearbeitet hat. Und stundenlang hat er dann gesessen, bis dieses Stück entstanden ist. Und er meinte, das klingt nicht so perfekt, das klingt teilweise ein bisschen verstimmt, ein bisschen rau, aber das ist auch die Absicht, weil dadurch klingt das Stück authentischer. Und der Sprechgesang, das kommt von einem Gedicht von seinem Großvater. Der Großvater Mervyn Peake war ziemlich bekannter Dramatiker und Dichter in England. Und sein Onkel hatte gerade irgendwelche Gedichte von ihm vorgelesen. Und er dachte, okay, das passt wunderbar. So, das ist auch eine Erinnerung auch an seinen ziemlich renommierten Großvater. In Großbritannien zumindest ist er bekannt, hier natürlich auch weniger. Hier ist also Gemini jetzt von dem neuen Album After You von Jack Panatti. So, das war After You von Jack Panatti mit Gemini von dem neuen Album. Und Jack ist immer noch bei mir im Studio. And so, do you feel like a sense of momentum now? I mean, let's hope it's not going to be another 10 years. I mean, could you imagine actually becoming really prolific? Maybe going completely the opposite way?
That's the plan.
Okay.
We start in December. I was literally just before this talking about this trip we're doing back to New York to start recording in December.
Wow.
So I've got songs already, and I've also got an arsenal of tracks that I've written over the last few years. And now that this record is done, lots are appearing that I didn't know would be, let's say, they only felt right for use after I finished this. It's as if they couldn't be anything while I was still trying to finish this album. So yeah, in a weird way, there's this like...
So they're still a bit fragmented, were they? They weren't actually...
No, there were some that are fully formed.
Oh, some
but
are fully
just
formed. Okay.
I just didn't feel they were right for this. I knew what this had to be. And so there are all these other songs and they're now appearing like old friends and they feel right. So I'm going to be going to New York straight away and starting. No, I don't want to jinx anything, but the plan in my mind is now to be as prolific as I possibly can. And especially in this musical climate where, you know, albums are incredibly important, of course, but it's just much more important you're there and you're in the game and you're making and you're putting out and you're not betting everything on one release. And that is the day when I put my last, you know, album out, it was still in that, it was that musical climate. You put a record out, you hope it gets in the top 10, you fingers crossed, you know, it's all that stuff. Now it's like people put out a record and then a year later, a track blows up. 2 years later, you know, that's literally what happens.
So it's very unpredictable.
So unpredictable. All you can be doing is being, I think, creative and putting out work that you're proud of. And eventually, and this is my hope, eventually something will connect. You know, if I'm making something good, then at some point it will find the right audience.
Now, I think it's interesting because when you first started, I think there was people had this varying perception of you. Some people kind of thought you were going to be this new mainstream star, and other people kind of thought you were going to be this indie star or whatever. And you almost kind of fell between two stools in a way.
Mm.
I mean, do you think that is not relevant anymore, though, that kind of categorization? Do you think it just because everything's so unpredictable?
Absolutely. I feel like I've entered back into the business side, or let's say the commerciality of what I do, at a time that's perfect for me as an artist.
Because you have a less conventional approach anyway.
Absolutely. So, yeah. I mean, the last album was like referencing krautrock. It was like Noi and Fela Kuti. That's what I literally went into the studio with Paul Etworth. I was like, Noi, Fela Kuti and Talking Heads.
Right.
Like, let's make that album. And at that point, no one was going, let's make a... You know, it was very like, okay, I'm doing my other...
Not even Lily Allen was doing it. No.
You know, and it doesn't seem that way now. You know, you put on like Travis Scott album, and he's referencing like he has, you know, what's Tame Impala, and then he'll have like, you know, sampling of. I mean, the way even hip-hop samples now. Beach House being sampled by Kendrick Lamar.
Mm.
You know, that's the world. Rat Boy sampled by Kendrick Lamar. You know, like, literally what's happening now.
So almost anything's possible,
It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. And that is so beautiful. I like that part of it. I'm like, this is really exciting. I've got a chance
here. But paradoxically, I think on this album here, in a sense, there is something, I won't say it's not traditional, but it does actually seem like it could reach out to people who don't necessarily want to be confronted all the time with an extremist attitude.
No, not at all.
I mean, I can imagine some people being drawn in who just like the idea of classic songwriting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the plan, and it was also, for me, this was reconciliation for me. This album is about coming to peace with the past and at last feeling like I can move on from what had held me back. And I didn't want to tell that story with an abstract view. I wanted it to be pure, and I wanted it to be as truthful as possible. It's not something that I felt would be bettered by, I suppose, putting some kind of frost over the window of what I'm making. I wanted the windows to be clear and clean and for you to see right into what has happened. And, you know, there's universality in pain, and I wanted to enter into that, you know, create with that mindset.
Okay. Ja, er sagt, das zweite Album war sehr experimentell. Er meinte, dass es war wirklich aus dem Nichts. Also er hatte so Krautrock-Einflüsse drauf gehabt, Bands wie Noi und dann afrikanische Künstler wie Fela Kuti waren auch ein Vorbild für ihn. Und er meinte, das scheint so lange her zu sein, aber er meinte, dass im Laufe der Jahre seitdem sind die Leute immer offener geworden, dass Musik ist immer unberechenbarer geworden. Er nannte ein Beispiel wie Travis Scott, der irgendwie Künstler wie Tame Impala als Inspiration nehmen. Oder sie haben irgendwelche Beach House Samples in Hip-Hop-Musik zum Beispiel. Das wäre früher undenkbar gewesen. Er meint, insofern ist die Welt offener geworden. Aber auf der anderen Seite, was dieses Album betrifft, dieses Comeback-Album von ihm, es ist schon gewissermaßen traditionsbewusster, ein bisschen konventioneller, weil er meinte, das Feeling des Albums ist eine Versöhnung. Er meinte, mit der Vergangenheit abzuschließen und an die Zukunft zu denken. Und er wollte das nicht auf abstrakte Weise darstellen. Er wollte, dass es eine gewisse Transparenz gibt, dass es nicht irgendwelche verschlüsselte Botschaften gibt, die wirklich kein Mensch versteht. Insofern ist es schon eingängig im Vergleich zu dem letzten Album. Und er denkt, dass also eine Menge Schmerz, seelischer Schmerz wird dargestellt auf dem Album. Und das ist was Universelles und das ist irgendwas, was alle Leute verstehen. Und es ist in diesem Zusammenhang mit Musik, die durchaus zwar anspruchsvoll ist, aber letztendlich nicht sperrig, also nicht zu schwierig und unangepasst. Right, well, thanks very much for coming out to talk to me. I appreciate that.
My pleasure.
And I'd like to play Swept to the Sky to finish off, which I think is an appropriate way to finish.
I'd love that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
And, well, for obvious reasons, you know, it closes the album, so it kind of sums up what we've been talking about, really.
Absolutely.
I think. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Good to talk to you. Okay. Zum Schluss haben wir jetzt Swept to the Sky von Jack Panatti von dem Album After You, das neue Album, das letzte Stück auf dem Album, und es ist auch ein passender Abschluss zu der Sendung. Das war der Nachtclub mit Paul Baskerville. Ich wünsche euch eine gute Nacht.
NDR Info. Die Nachrichten.